That's Chelsea Dagger, and this is the Blackhawks Crazy Podcast. Now, I've been one of the co-hosts for three seasons now. This is Scott King speaking. You can tell by my voice if you've listened. And also, if you listened to the last show, you know that Mike Jacobson, who was also co-hosting the last three seasons, left us, unfortunately. Took a really nice job at a school where he was teaching. He had a lot of duties here at WGN Radio. Did a great job, and appreciate all his help behind the scenes here with the podcast. And look, we got another co-host. And I got a call during around vacation time, and I was very, very happy to get this guy. He's very busy. You know him from the Blackhawks pre- and post-game show and also the game broadcast. Please welcome Chris Bowden, everybody. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. You couldn't pull out enough Benjamins out of your wallet to keep Mike around. That was the big difference here.
I started a GoFundMe. I don't think people saw it.
No, I'm happy to be a part of this. It's good to do this on a weekly basis, sounds like.
Yeah,
and
we'll try.
You know, boy, the Blackhawks are giving us enough stuff to talk about the up and down play that they've had all season long, and as they come out of this break looking for consistency, but then there seems to be a big question mark over there continues to be a big question mark over their goaltending situation too.
So. Yeah, I mean we it was a question mark. We got an answer kind of with a report that came out, mm-hmm. and that he was suffering vertigo like symptoms. I think it was first reported by Elliot Friedman.
Yeah, and then the Sun Times went out and did the same thing with Mark Lazarus. Now, since then, within 24 hours of that, you know, Scotty Bowman, who is a member of the Blackhawks hierarchy and probably the most respected hockey person ever in the face of the earth, went on a radio show up in Canada and said, you know, it could be post concussion syndrome. It's not necessarily vertical, but I think at this point, when you look at whatever the injury is, it's up there, and at some point you're almost kind of splitting hairs in terms of what post-concussion syndrome is, what vertigo is, and granted, there, if it's true that one of the two things that's bothering him, you're still going through probably a similar type of process,
yeah,
in order to get through it,
right?
And the just upsetting thing is there's the great unknown. It's not a broken bone, that you know is going to heal in 6 to 8 weeks. It's not a torn ACL or a pulled muscle where there are definite timelines on that. The frustrating thing for the Blackhawks is if in fact this is what we're talking about, one of these two things. It's just open-ended, and you never, you know, we saw a few years ago, Sidney Crosby took forever to return. He'd come back, he'd suffer symptoms again, and that's really the frightening part. And just for Corey's well-being, you know, there's definite issues here in terms of what this means for the Blackhawks, which we'll get into in a minute here, but just for Corey's well-being.
Totally.
Yeah. You know, you see him, he's got a young kid skating around at the holiday Christmas party, the kid's goalie pads are on
that. Just had a son.
Right, and you just hope for his well-being from a non-selfish Blackhawks standpoint that he can work his way through this and work his way through it quickly. And I think at least one other point in his career, he's been bothered by this type of thing too.
Yeah, it does seem that way. And like you said, these symptoms are very tough when you talk about vertigo-like symptoms and also post-concussion. So, I mean, to me, Scott, I don't know if you listened, but to me, Scotty Bowman didn't sound like a guy who was guessing. I think maybe mm-hmm. he did a guy's radio show he was friendly with and kind of seemed like something he might have heard, but he said the early reports were wrong about the vertigo-like symptoms. Actually, I think they're pretty accurate. They're very similar. You get nausea and dizziness, mm-hmm. and very tough things to go through and play through, and that's why Crawford has been sidelined for so long. So, you compare him to Crosby, and that's why so many people have worried about Taves over the years. And,
right.
And if he's doing okay, if he's able to play to his fullest and get better and move on from that. And you look at the last couple of weeks that first line's had, it looks like he has. So mm-hmm. it is something you can rebound from. The report being that the team is worried that he could miss the rest of the season, that's very concerning. That they think it might take him a lot of time to get there where he can play again.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, within a couple of weeks of Corey not playing, when they came back home from that six-game stretch, Joel was asked point-blank whether he expects him to be back at some point this season. And Joel seemed very definitive that it would be. So that led you to believe it might not be some one of these issues that's kind of open-ended and uncertain. But, yeah, if these reports are accurate via Scotty, via the Sun-Times, whatever it is, now we're dealing with a much more – open-ended situation. And perhaps when Joel said that at the time, there were some steps being made. They were starting to see some progress in what Corey was going through, if in fact that's what it is. But now you just don't know how long these things will linger, to what severity they are. And at that job, in this sport, you have to be 100% good to go.
Oh yeah,
because it's such a fast game, it's such a hard game, and you know, whether you're playing defense or center or goaltender and have pucks flying at you and bodies flying at you too, that's kind of the other unknown here, is that there didn't seem to be a definitive moment. I think there was a collision in the Dallas game, which was the next to last game before the Blackhawks went on their holiday break.
The 27th, I think, in December,
yeah,
that was.
Yeah. Well, it was before Christmas.
I'm sorry, you're right.
Yeah, and then they went to New Jersey, yep, and he had that rough outing in New Jersey where it wasn't just Corey. It was the entire team that didn't play well in front of him. But then he was pulled out of there, and we haven't seen and heard from him since. And it's been the Jeff Glass and Anton Forsberg show since then.
Yeah, and people have talked about that collision with Malkin earlier in the season,
right,
too, as a possibility for something that could
that
have
seemed to be what Scotty was alluding to as well.
Yeah,
too. If what he's saying is accurate, that may have been an incident. And you know what? These guys in every sport, they can get checked out right away, and they pass the test. They seem fine, and it's a situation where a little bit later on, all of a sudden, some of these symptoms start creeping in, and to varying severities too. So that's really the disconcerting part about all this too.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about how it's going to impact Corey and a guy who just had a kid, a really unfortunate circumstance. But when you look at how it could affect the team, in my opinion, Chris, this is the worst thing that could happen to the team, is him being out, mm-hmm, missing a lot of time. Because look, Patrick Kane is not missing anything or dropping off at all. He's still Patrick Kane, one of the best players in the league. But Corey Crawford's the MVP this season.
Yeah.
And without him, you wouldn't be checking the standings every day to see if they're close to a wild card after every game, because they would have fell off in December, early December.
Yeah. And to be quite honest, even when Corey was in there standing on his head, like everyone likes to say, this team was still inconsistent. And if they're going to work their way through this and get back into, you know, wild card contention, and because that's all they are right now is wild card contention, as we tape this on Thursday afternoon, they start winding down this bye week that they have. But you know, now as we look at the standings here, just from a wild card standpoint, and a couple of these teams have games tonight as we tape. Dallas at 55, LA at 53, holding down the two wild card positions. LA holding a tiebreaker over Minnesota, which is also going through its bye week right now. And then Anaheim wins on Wednesday night, so they and Colorado are now 1 point ahead of the Blackhawks, and they have games here before the Blackhawks are even back on the ice Saturday night at the United Center against the New York Islanders. So the hill's getting a little bit steeper here. But even when Corey Crawford was playing, I think there was still this feeling that the Blackhawks, you know, still had not come close to hitting their stride from a consistency standpoint. You'd see flashes for three or four games here, and even most recently we saw flashes where they went through a 5-2-1 stretch. Okay, they're managing this despite Crawford's absence with the two goalies that they have, who actually, you know, even including, I was looking it up last night, even including that real stinker against Detroit on Sunday at the United Center when the Jeff Glass gave up four goals and wasn't getting a whole lot of help, including that in this 9-game stretch where they've gone 5-3-1, the combined save percentage for Forsberg and Glass was .919. And you take that. When you look at team save percentages right now throughout the NHL, team save percentage, the highest one is at .923, .924, in that range. So if you're getting .919 from these guys, I think you'd take that when they have a combined, 30-plus games of NHL experience.
Right.
It's all about the guys around them playing better. And, you know, we've seen flashes of it at certain points this season. And then you come up with one of those games like Sundays against Detroit where, you know, just when you think they're hitting their stride, it's another step back.
Well, two things there. I think, first, when you look at Forsberg, I mean, yeah, Glass has this amazing story. He's been playing great. But don't you just feel bad for Forsberg, because they never played well in front of him in the first half of the season. And most of the first half of the season, especially early on, when he's getting those starts, they just weren't showing up. Yeah. There's those games where they just weren't showing up.
Right. And he's found a way to overcome that of late. I think that during that last stretch when he played three in a row before Glass was given the net against Winnipeg and then against Detroit last Sunday, he put together a nice little stretch where I think it was 2-1, a .943 save percentage, and, you know, the bad part about it is the amount of shots that they've seen. Now, the Blackhawks are playing a little bit better in front of them. There was that 8-2 win against Ottawa, of course. But they started playing a little bit better in front of them. And then Glass got the net for two in a row. And I think you're just going to have to prepare yourself that this is the way it's going to be for the foreseeable future until they get any more clarity, if they get any more clarity on Corey Crawford. And everyone's going to have to play in front. If they don't, then this team is in serious. There are people out there who think this team is in serious trouble right now, and you know, I can vouch for, if that's the way you want to feel when you look at the standings, you have every right to feel that way. And they haven't proven that they can put a consistent run together, the kind of thing like Calgary's going through right now with seven consecutive wins. We haven't seen that type of dominant stretch for the Blackhawks. At tops, they've gone five or six games playing pretty well, or point streaks of five or six games, nothing more than that. And there's another level that if you believe in what this roster consists of, that they can find somewhere here before the end of the season. The problem is they're working from behind right now with the position that they put themselves in.
Well, let's talk about that roster. Let's talk about what's been some of the components that have been so inconsistent. For me, the biggest disappointment would be the first line. I think the last few games have been playing great. I think Jonathan Toews starting to look like Jonathan Toews again. I think Brandon Saad's been crashing that, getting some quality looks. But they just didn't have it in the beginning of the season. And when you saw the trade for Brandon Saad, I immediately thought, all right, Johnny's going to get going.
Sure.
Jonathan Toews is going to be back.
Sure. And then you saw the first two games of the year, too.
Yeah. And no, you see Brandon Saad get a hat trick in the first game, and you're like, oh my God, this is really going to work out for them. And you saw Richard Panik get 20 goals last year and play like a wrecking ball. And God, did he fall off. So much so where he had to pack his bags and get out of town.
Right.
So for me, that was, I think, Chris, the most disappointing thing. I knew the new defense would have growing pains, but that first line, I think, is one of the biggest reasons, because you need your first line to dictate the play. So I think that was one of the biggest reasons they've been so inconsistent this season, was that top line.
Yeah, and even that's just kind of a microcosm as to how this is not to put it all on the first line, because there's plenty of credit and there's plenty of blame to go around throughout this roster. But what the first line's been going through is kind of a microcosm of this entire season. Yeah, they were playing well there for a couple of games, but now, Scott, I'm looking at the last three or four games, and now you're falling back into trend that we've seen all season long of up and down. 0 points in the last four games for Brandon Saad after that Detroit game. 0 points in the last three. We saw a little bit of a bump when Vinny Hinostroza was given that opportunity on that line. But now, in the last couple of games, you ended up with a nice win over Winnipeg, and then you had that game against Detroit. Now you're starting to wonder about the inconsistency again and whether Hinostroza can be that long-term fit, or at least that type of fit that Schmaltz was toward the end of last season, when he was given a part of that line with Jonathan Toews and Richard Panik. And you saw Toews' play jump. And historically, over the last couple of seasons, you've seen Toews' play step up in January and February. We were starting to see that for a few games, and you're thinking, okay, this thing might be solved by now. But then over the last few, other people are picking up the slack, or there's not enough pickup being done in that Detroit game, so to speak. So I don't think this is an answer quite yet, and that's something that those two guys in particular still have to prove here.
Should Q have left that line alone when he put Anthony Duclair on the first line? It made sense to me. He started giving him a bunch of opportunities. He put him on the first power play unit. Mm-hmm. He put him right on the top line, which is great, but like you just said, which was the case, is that Vinny Hinostroza gave that line what it needed. It gave him some spill. No, some speed, and his skills gotten a lot better. His hands have gotten a lot better.
That's putting those two words together, the spill.
Yeah, it's a term that we're coining on this podcast.
Or skied.
Copyright Blackhawks crazy. skied.
Yeah.
No, so I don't know. Maybe, Chris, you think that, it was just a game or two, but maybe he should have left that top line alone because Hinostroza was working out so well there.
Yeah, at some point, you can make the argument that Joe blends things a little bit too much. I think he's been tremendously patient this season, especially with that top line, especially, for the most part, giving Panic enough chances when he was still here to try and find his game, and that never happened. All of a sudden, kind of stumbled upon the Hinostroza thing.
Let me stop you there, Chris. Why do you think that happened with Panic? Because I thought, I really, like I said, the way the guy played, I really thought this was going to be one of the most dangerous first lines in the league this year.
Yeah.
What happened to him?
Based on recent history, you think this is a guy who finally found his game. But unfortunately, the trust that Stan Bowman put in him with that contract, and yes, the argument can be made, let him get out on the market before you set what that market is with that 2-year contract that they gave Richard Panik. Well, if he leaves, then you're going to try and find somebody to fill that role anyway. So whether that was the right price tag or not, that can be argued. But I don't blame him for re-signing Panik for the, you know, all of a sudden it seemed like a revelation. The light finally went on for him last year.
Yeah.
And but then it went away just as quickly. And this is one of a couple of guys on that roster who really seem to wear it and let it bother them, and the problem becomes even bigger the longer it goes on. He's one of a couple of guys on that roster where, you know, we even saw a veteran like Patrick Sharp just struggle so much, something he's not used to, and him having the kind of start to a season that he had is something so unfamiliar with him that this becomes a mind game for these guys individually as well, and it almost becomes a situation where they're snake bit. That was the case with Panic, and I think what really bothered Joel more than anything is that, all right, if you're not going to be scoring, you got to bring other things to the table. And there were too many times when Panic was given yet another opportunity where the lack of scoring seemed to affect the rest of his game. And, you know, if that's going to happen when you're having some of these stretches, as the Blackhawks have had this season, where you're going through these stretches and you look at this roster, why aren't they scoring more than they are? And, you know, one of those guys you relied upon was a Richard Panik, or some of these kids who had seasons last year, like Ryan Hartman, you thought that was a breakthrough as well. One or two other guys where, you know, they just seem to wear it, and you have the old snowball effect where it just becomes bigger and bigger the longer that it goes.
Yeah, and it happens more when it's your first line or somebody on the first line doing that.
Right.
I don't think it was just that he wasn't scoring. It's also he wasn't being as hard on pucks as he used to be.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't going in that creating traffic like he used to.
Right.
That's the thing that I just can't get it. He gets a good contract. Things worked out very well for him last year. He's playing with really skilled guys. I just don't know. I just don't know what happens. You don't know if he's, you know, everyone's mum on injuries. You don't know if he had something.
Yeah, but I think what Stan's thinking obviously at the time was, okay, we finally got him in this system. We saw what he did last year. All those problems of inconsistencies that he's had in the past are now behind him.
He couldn't crack the lineup on the worst team in the league, and then he looked great with the Hawks last year.
So you know, you're thinking as a result of the people he has around him, the players that he's playing with, all right, he's finally living up to his potential. Well, he's restricted. You know, he's going to be out on the market. Do we let him go, try and set a price with him before he hits the market? But if he's out there and someone with a low floor from a salary cap standpoint is going to throw comparable or even more money for him, then we're looking to fill that role anyway. So to me, that's what Stan's thinking was at the time, whether you like it or agree with it or not. That's what he was thinking. And unfortunately, the player went back to being the player he was prior to last season.
Well, in trading him to Arizona, they get a 22-year-old kid very fast, good hands. Wasn't quite, you know, he scratched in Arizona, wasn't quite working out. But you can't argue with that return. Not only was it a good trade, but he's kind of admitting a mistake, something you don't see a lot of GMs do, that, yeah, I was wrong about this guy in this contract, but let's make this happen.
To me,
definitely an upgrade.
Yeah, to me, there were a couple nice things about that deal. It's the salary cap space that you're picking up and getting Anthony Duclair. But also, this league is all about speed now. I mean, to me, it's even so much more different than it was 3 or 4 years ago. It is such a fast game right now. And the Blackhawks, you know, they have some portions of that lineup where, you know, they could improve upon that area. And Duclair is a guy who is going to bring that. Now, whether he can find his game like Panic did a year ago with the Blackhawks and then sustain that and maintain that. First, he's got to find it again, like he scored 20 goals 2 years ago with Arizona, then had the dip last year into this season. Can he reclaim that game that he had a couple of years ago? And then being around this team and the teammates that he has, you know, benefit from all that. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case with Richard Panik, and you hope that Stan Bowman's struck something here with Duclair, too.
Well said. I think we got a. I think we have time for a fan question. I think we got a question.
Seth from Facebook. Let's see. His question is, and thanks for sending it in, Seth. Maybe this season just isn't it. What can we be excited for next season? Prospect second year, guys. Is the window still open? Well, there's a lot of debate about whether that window is still open.
But it's a very optimistic question.
Right. It is. But to me, I look at this, and Troy and I were talking about this on the pre and post game, you know, over the course of the last several days. You look at this roster and you look at this lineup, and this is kind of a rebuild on the fly. You have Ryan Hartman, who certainly set a bar last year with his 19 goals. And I looked it up a couple of weeks ago. He actually had more offensive production as of 2 or 3 weeks ago this year than he had at the same point a year ago. So you're looking at some of his numbers, just 7 goals, just 20 points, especially after the hot start he got out to. These are some of the kids who are learning about, you know, adjusting your game and how teams react to you from year one to year two. He's going through that. Nick Schmaltz is going through that. David Kampf has looked really good. Alex DeBrinket is learning this league on the fly.
Jordan
as well.
Osterley has looked great.
Jordan Osterley is the same way. You're looking at the second pairing that, you know, has been a reason for optimism with, you know, they're just letting these kids go out and play. And I know there was a huge, you know, there were two sides to this. You either stockpile stars and continue to make a cup run or try to remain in contention during the course of a season, hope some of these young guys grow during the course of the season while still being able to make the playoffs, and hope the light really goes on for these guys the longer they play, the more exposure that they get during the course of a 82-game, six-month season. And then when the playoffs come around, then they're really clicking and they find another level. So this is, to me, this is kind of a rebuild on the fly where you have a number of young guys that you're relying upon. You're not always going to get what you expect or hope for because they're going through the growing pains of being a young NHL player. And I think this is just this part of the process that the Blackhawks have to go through right now. And sometimes the results aren't pretty, you know, as we've seen. You know, Nick Schmaltz, who was putting a run together for a couple of weeks of piling up points and looking absolutely great, you know, he was one of those guys who had a real rough game. He wasn't the only one, but had a real rough game on Sunday against Detroit. There were a couple of others as well. You know, that's when those are the times you're hoping your leadership and your veterans are able to step up and make a difference. Well, nothing was going on Sunday against Detroit. So from his question, I think there is an excitement factor for next season. You may have to live through some disappointment and some exasperation this season while hoping you still make the playoffs. But I think this is part of what is an unstated process that Stan Bowman is bringing this team through. And he mentioned after the Duclair trade a year ago, I think he said they had 4 or 5 guys age 23 or younger on that roster, and now he's got what, 13 or something like that.
13, yeah.
So, you know, you're not going to come out and declare we're rebuilding right now while trying to win Stanley Cups, but I think it's they're at the point now where they needed to do that, and you almost saw this was eventually going to come with, you know, trying to keep core players together who have won Stanley Cups and hoping that they can guide you along. And unfortunately, that hasn't necessarily been the case this season with some of the veterans that, you know, whether it's wear and tear or whether, you know, they're having to find ways to adjust their game to what the NHL is right now. I think there's an adjustment process going on with some of these older players, too.
Yeah, no, there has been a quiet rebuild going on, and you're completely right about Nick Schmaltz. And let's not forget, it's just a little over 100 games, and he's very fast up the middle. Great hands, has a great shot, playing really well with Kane. Something he needs to improve on, though, faceoffs.
Yeah.
If he wants to be a top center in the league, and I think he has the potential, he's got to get better on the dot.
Yeah.
And I think, Seth, you could also be happy and look forward to Alex DeBrincat. I mean, if this rookie class this year wasn't so surprisingly good, DeBrincat could have a chance at a Calder. I think he's still about sixth in scoring among rookies with 28 points.
Right.
So, he's having a phenomenal year.
There's kind a ton of young talent.
Under the radar, yeah.
There's a ton of young talent out there in the NHL this season. So, yeah, obviously, you know, and also, you know, furthering our point in answering Seth's question, you want to have your cake and eat it too. I mean, you want to be sitting where
especially
you were.
Especially in Chicago. You want a cup every year in Chicago.
And they've spoiled us to that from that standpoint. And obviously, the goal is to make the playoffs. You're hoping some of these young guys are really starting to click on all cylinders. when you make the playoffs, but now we're in a situation where the question is if they make the playoffs based on, you know, the position that they've put themselves through with some of the inconsistent play the first four months of the season.
Well, quick thing before the plugs, Chris, about playoffs this year and this year. Yeah, there's stuff to be excited about next year, but let's say they do realize, or maybe they already know, Crawford's not going to be here for a while. Mm-hmm. And do you go with Glass or Forsberg, or do you get the cap relief from LTIR and go bring back an Antti Raanta, who makes a lot of sense because Stan has traded twice with Arizona already this year. Mm-hmm. And you know Bowman likes to trade in bunches, whether it was Florida before with Dale Talon, obviously, from Chicago, or he's traded with the Jets, I believe, a lot in the past. He kind of likes to trade with teams in bunches, and they need a goalie who can be a starter. They're not, I don't think they're going to roll with two backups if Crawford's out for a while. They do want to make the playoffs this year, and they always want to contend. So what do you think about – who else do you think they can bring back, Chris? And do you think – for me, I think Ranta's the likeliest guy.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to look around, that might be a candidate right there. I think Arizona has that Scott Wedgwood guy that they brought up, and you know, Antti was actually going through his own injury problems earlier on.
$1 million cap hit, I just remembered for Antti.
Yeah, so affordable, yes. I think he'll be entering free agency too.
Yes,
when we hit the summer. The thing right now is there's time. There's not a whole lot, but when they come out of this break, I think Stan will have a little better sense over the course of the first couple of weeks. That deadline isn't until February 26th. They're probably going to be at least 5 points out of the wild card when they come back. So coming back out of this, you got the Islanders on Saturday, who score a bunch of goals and give up a bunch of goals. Then you have Tampa Bay and Toronto with home games on Monday and Wednesday. Then you have a return trip to Detroit before you hit the All-Star weekend. Coming out of that, a road game at Nashville, and then you're staying on the road a little bit longer with games at Vancouver and at Calgary to start the month of February. So I think these next couple of weeks, seeing how this team reacts, how it plays, how those goalies look, if they continue, you know, playing at a 919, 920 save percentage type style, that should be good enough if everyone's playing well around them. But you're also having to look, too, about these teams in front of you, how they're playing. Did they hit any kind of the speed bumps that the Blackhawks have hit a little bit all too frequently here the first few months of the season? Are you going to be able to gain some ground? Because right now, as things stand now, they're going to have to get on a hot streak and have to get on one real quick. And then from here on out, you have a little bit more than a month to decide whether you're in or you're out. And I know, if you decide you're out, that's going to be a pretty bitter swill for bitter. We're combining words here.
I mean, it's our thing. Bitter, it's our thing now.
Bitter or skeet. a bitter pill for fans to swallow. And if the fans think that's a bitter pill, it's really a bitter one for the front office, because you know what their mindset is to always make it there to the postseason. So some interesting decisions are going to have to come here in the next 4 weeks based on the play of this team coming out of this break.
I think you'll be at practice Friday, too, if there's any breaking news
Friday,
or comments
4 o'clock,
on Crawford.
We'll be there. I would expect, you know, until they get some clarity, that they'll remain mum on this. And
unless Scotty Bowman's doing radio interviews.
Some of the people may be surprised at what came out of the radio right there, whether they wanted that or not.
We just tried to book him for the podcast.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe we can get a little bit more out of Scotty. I mean, there's a man with tons of stories.
He's hockey royalty. He's absolutely the best.
All right. Follow along on the Blackhawks Crazy Facebook page at facebook.com/Blackhawks Crazy for everything Hawks, including Scott's Chelsea Blogger blog. And follow me and Scott on Twitter. I'm at Boden Tweets, just like it's, if you don't know the spelling, it's Boden Tweets, and at Scott King Media. And make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and leave a review. How'd things go this first time?
I liked it. All right. I really liked the way you enunciated the plugs. I think it's pretty smooth.
And we're both combining words, making new words for the 2019 dictionary.
You got to come up with gags and things people expect when you got a new rapport on the show.
Okay.
So, and I want to thank Joe Romano for helping us out with production today, too. Great to have Joe here.
The best. We were not going to tell him to do like the Bears podcast and have irate phone calls or voicemails on yet.
Not yet.
I know it would have been ugly after the game against the Detroit Red Wings. I know that. So, Joe, thank you. Scott, thanks a bunch.
Thank you, sir. Great to have you. Appreciate it.
Let's do this next week.
All right.